This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
All right, 6:11 now. Our friend Paul Conroy would normally join us, but there's too much stuff to talk about, and it might take Paul away from his weather duties for the moment, so we'll reconnect. But in the meantime, here's some things that are happening. Two dead, many, many injured in another Florida nightclub shooting, this in Fort Myers. This is sort of an inexplicable act of violence in so many ways because it was teen night at this particular nightclub, and kids as young as 12 years old have been either injured in the melee or shot. There was a 12-year-old reported at the hospital. Injury is unclear at this point. As I said, two are dead. There apparently was a shooting that either occurred right before or right after at the house of one of the suspects. There could be two or three suspects in total. At least two or three people have been brought in for questioning. And at this point, we don't know the conditions of the others. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There were as many as two other scenes. The one that you referred to was literally five blocks away from that nightclub in front of a home. So they don't know if that could have been the suspect's home, one of the suspects. But you are right, too. Witnesses say that three people left the scene in a car. And again, this could all change.
And also fired from the car into the crowd.
Yeah.
Another act of terrorism. This, by the way, the Florida thing, not terrorism as far as we know, but we don't know. In Germany, another act of terrorism with a suicide bomber who killed many at a music festival. That was over the weekend. And again, because of the volume of these, don't be surprised if you've missed a few. Donald Trump did get a bounce out of the Republican convention. A poll released just this morning, CNN ORC poll, showed a significant bounce out of the convention, mostly based on his speech on Thursday night. Meanwhile, the Democrats start in Philadelphia today at 4 o'clock. The Democrats are in a world of hurt this morning, basically because someone the vast majority of you wouldn't know, because why would you? There's a man named Reince Priebus, who is the head of the Republican National Committee. Nice guy. He actually looks like his name. You know, very few people actually looks like their name. He looks like a guy named Reince.
Yeah, he kind of does.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz is his peer on the DNC side. She is as much of a homer as you could possibly be. She's more annoying than Howard Dean was. Remember Howard Dean, the screamer? We're going to Iowa! We're going to Iowa City! We're going to Ottumwa! And we're going to the quads! Remember that guy?
I do remember. Yeah, yeah, I remember that speech vividly, too.
So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, as head of the DNC, was forced to step down yesterday because it was revealed through an email leak, we'll get to that in a second, that, yeah, it was a rigged system and that the DNC is supposed to be the impartial arbiters of the election and the primary season for the Democrats. Even with a superdelegate system, they're still not supposed to take sides. A whole bunch of emails released showing taking sides is exactly what they did. And one of the leadership members of the DMC, the DNC, said, is he really a Jew? In one of the emails, because I already might be an atheist. And where I'm from in the South, the difference between an atheist and a Jew is pretty significant. We ought to use that. This is not Hillary's campaign. This is the DNC. So you would obviously assume that Debbie Wasserman Schultz has stepped down and she's getting out of the way so the Hillary Clinton campaign can have a clean convention. Not so fast. Now, she may have slept on it. She may change her mind today. But as of now, she will still gavel the convention in today, guaranteed to be booed out of the room.
No,
Ted Cruz level boos.
Completely.
Also holding on to her speaker spot. I think that's tonight as well. And then gaveling the convention to a close at the end of the week. Completely selfish and a real lack of leadership by Hillary Clinton and President Obama. Because you need to take Debbie Wasserman Schultz aside and go, yep, you've done a lot of work and we thank you. And it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go. And you got to go today. Not Friday, not Thursday, not Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. You're out today.
Yeah, and wasn't her reasoning, well, I put so much time into the convention?
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. And her second in command is a woman you see on CNN all the time. Why am I spacing on her name? Donna Brazile.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Donna Brazile has taken over the RNC, or the DNC, at least for now, though Senator Durbin is one of the people expected to be offered the gig. Donna Brazile said yesterday, there are many more emails that are going to be released, and her quote was great. She said, yep, there's a lot of stuff we're going to have to apologize for. So, you know, whatever you're doing this morning, wherever you are, think about the emails you've sent or received. All of us have emails we wouldn't want released to the public.
It's always going to come down to an email nowadays.
But in 2016, how could you be in the position you're in amongst the Democrats, even though that's a primary form of communication, knowing that your candidate that you're trying to get elected in a weaselly fashion has this email scandal hanging over her head, and you're shooting emails back and forth about maybe we could call the guy an atheist because that's less offensive than being a Jew. I mean,
it's not good.
You can't measure that level as stupid.
No, no. Well, we knew the week wasn't going to begin just fresh and without incident. Last week didn't, so.
It's outrageous.
There's mud everywhere.
I would expect that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Friesenglage, and Farfik Nugent will actually step down before 4 o'clock today. Officially step down, as in pull herself out. If she doesn't, and Hillary Clinton allows her to stay. And by the way, Hillary Clinton, either Debbie Wasserman Schultz has something more significant on Hillary Clinton, or Hillary Clinton is a fool because Hillary Clinton immediately gave her a primary campaign position. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is also trying to run for reelection in her district in Florida, and she's got a tough fight there. So if she makes it worse for candidate Clinton, that could tip the election in favor of her opponent, and then she's out of Congress as well.
Right.
But for the Clinton campaign or Obama not to go, look, Debbie, you're done.
Oh,
hit the bricks.
I think they will, don't you?
I don't.
If she gavels it.
I think she's got to say, I'm out.
If she gavels it, I don't see her speaking. I really don't.
But all you need is one. All you need is one. All you need is that one moment. Just her and a hammer. She's got the hammer and she goes to the gavel and she gets booed. That's all you need. That's the campaign. That's the commercial that runs for Trump. You're just writing his commercials for him. We'll talk to Eric Adelstein about this later.
He already tweeted, by the way, yesterday.
What did he say?
The highly neurotic Debbie Wasserman Schultz is angry that after stealing and cheating her way to a crooked Hillary victory, she's out.
Well, good. So we'll talk to Adelstein about that specifically. Okay. And then finally, I don't know when we'll get to this, but I do want you to know each Olympian at the Olympic Games has received 42 condoms. 42.
What? 42?
42.
Well, they're there for like 2 weeks plus.
Yeah. I remember when I was an Olympic level triple jumper. Mm-hmm. Back then, we only got 40 condoms. I mean, they've really gone up.
Didn't you always say if the Olympic Village is a rockin'?
Yeah, don't come knocking. Yeah. The Olympic Village, declared by the Australian team who got there over the weekend, uninhabitable. They did something called a toilet stress test, where they flushed the toilets and water came down the walls from one level to the next. The Australian team immediately went and checked into hotels in Rio until Rio finds suitable conditions for them to move in. The mayor of Rio, obviously from the Donald Trump School of Politically Correct Behavior, said, oh, they don't like it? Well, maybe we'll send them a kangaroo. It'll make them feel better.
It sounds like my first hotel in Cleveland before Anna and I moved.
Well, you know who I was thinking of?
We didn't get a kangaroo.
I was thinking of our friend from the Chicago Tribune, who's, if she's not in Rio, she's got to be there any minute.
Oh, Stacy, yeah. She'll be with us, I think, this week.
Yeah, because Stacy St. Clair, she could have a toilet with water running down the walls right now.
Poor
thing. We got it all covered. I spent about 6 hours outdoors both days in the crazy heat yesterday and on Saturday as well. And I have, this is a rough estimate, because Rocky would appreciate this. Remember the scene in Rocky where he drank the thing with the egg in it?
Oh, yeah.
I believe since Saturday, I have had 75 bottles of water, and I haven't peed since last Tuesday.
That's not a good sign.
Well, there's a lot of, a lot of heat, a lot of heat. Naomi Schaefer Riley standing by on the phone, New York Post writer, also has been an editor at the Wall Street Journal. You might have seen her on the Today Show. She's written several books. She's far too qualified to be on the show. Good morning, Naomi. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for that introduction.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. Are you in Philly now?
No, I'm not. I'm based in New York, but I'm following things closely.
All right. So, look, I don't know. Well, look, I don't. Why am I surprised? Last week, the Republicans essentially, regardless of this new CNN poll, handed the Democrats this week on a platter. And what have they done with it so far? They've got a problem with the lead of their party, the DNC party, or the DNC chair, I should say. And she doesn't even have the good sense to go away. How could they have screwed this up?
Well, I mean, it really is hard to imagine how the DNC has outdone the RNC in terms of organization at this point. Yeah, you're expecting if the RNC had flickering screens up above, maybe the DNC screens will just blow up. I have no idea. It's amazing, and it's amazing the timing of all of this. I guess we have Russian spy agencies to blame for that. But yeah, it's absolutely amazing that that this is how they're going to launch the convention tonight. And I guess you'll see if Bernie can swallow his pride and just try to unify the party tonight, but it's going to be, I think, hard for him to do that.
Well, and he has no control over his supporters. You can't, you know, Bernie Sanders isn't going to go around in the street and going, do you support me? Then don't boo. He's got enough problems. I mean, they'll do what they want to do, right?
Yeah, I think so. Although I still think that you know, Hillary must be pretty confident that her left flank is going to do well, or you know, is going to come out for her. Otherwise, she wouldn't have picked Tim Kaine. It seems like these people are going to look at the alternative, and you know, I know there are a few Bernie supporters out there who are thinking about voting for Trump, but for the most part, I think the left wing of the Democratic Party is pretty horrified by Donald Trump and would do a lot to keep him out of office.
I think Bernie's going to take the high road when he speaks tonight. I don't think he's going to reference this at all. He'll just push Hillary. But Naomi, do you see between now and this evening Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying, well, you know what, I'm done, I'm not going to gavel it, or I'm not going to speak?
There's a lot of pressure for her to do, for her to just step away, and it would be hard to imagine what she would possibly gain, you know, for her own career by staying in there and pissing off every Democratic operative out there.
Yeah, because that's the problem, right? She's got her own reelection thing in Florida, so there were people going, "Oh, Ted Cruz ended his career last week." I don't agree with that at all, even though I'm no Ted Cruz fan by any stretch. But
yeah,
she,
I think Ted Cruz is a great comparison. I mean, I think he clearly thinks that what he did was a strategy to, you know, pushing his future. But I can't imagine that gaveling the convention for Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to help her in any particular way.
No, and it's just going to create this boo TV commercial that her opponent can use or anybody else can use. You know, Reince Priebus and Debbie Wasserman Schultz are two odd names for people that no one should ever know or talk about, unless you're some big check writer for either party. And here they are on the front pages because Reince can't control Trump and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is involved in, you know, holding down poor Bernie. I mean, what a mess.
Yeah, it has been amazing, you know, how Reince Priebus has become a household name in the last few months. And yes, absolutely, that's a sign of a poorly managed party when the head of it, you know, who's supposed to be a behind-the-scenes operative, is on the front page of the papers. You do not want that to happen.
Now, the biggest story here, and this is a huge story, I've never gone with the notion that Trump has any strategy. Trump gets up in the morning, whatever he wakes up and puts his hair on. And by the way, he puts his hair on like the rest of us, one piece at a time. But whenever he starts his day, open mouth, grab phone, start tweeting. There's no strategy there. It's whatever's happening that day. Maybe Paul Manafort's had some impact on him. I don't know. But this idea that Vladimir Putin and Trump are talking about how to make sure Trump gets elected, I mean, I could see Putin trying to orchestrate things, but we can't have Russia involved in an election, can we?
Yeah, obviously not. And I don't know that anybody is really claiming that that they're really in cahoots with each other. Yeah, I think you know, somebody is pulling the strings over there, and I certainly don't think Trump has the forethought, let alone the connections to make this sort of thing happen, let alone this kind of timing. But yeah, I do think that this is a huge red flag that we have, and I, you know, no pun intended, but that we have, you know, Russian officials who have gotten a hold of internal documents in American political parties and are releasing them. I mean, it is truly a sign of how lax we have become about security and how much, I mean, and it should really drive home the point for people how much other countries have at stake in our election and how important it is to vote, I think, based on who you think is going to keep our country secure. And right now, I can't imagine that that Trump is inspiring much hope with this Vladimir Putin dump.
Yeah, and President Obama needs to be out in front of this. He needs to be out in front of this today and make a public statement saying, Putin, you stay out of our elections and get a hold of your people and get a handle on what you're doing here, because there will be consequences to this. Another red line.
It's amazing how out of control this seems and how Obama is, you know, right now nowhere to be found on this. I mean, how we have these, two not even, presidents, who are talking about this stuff. And it almost seems like, we're on this, rudderless ship at this point, and nobody is really kind of cracking down on him. But we've hit the reset button, so.
Last.
Bottom line, Naomi, will this hurt the Democrats? Will this hurt Hillary? Because I think if I went on Michigan Avenue right now and asked people who Reince Priebus is or who Debbie Wasserman Schultz is, nobody would even know.
Well, I mean, that's always a good test. But the question is, I do think we're getting to the point where voters are starting to pay attention. I think, 3 months ago, it would have been easier to say nobody cares about this. But now that we have, these conventions that are going on at prime time, it is getting to be the end of the summer. I think people are starting to wake up and wonder, maybe I should start paying attention to these candidates and who I should vote for. And, and this will be on the front page of the papers, and this will be in all the all the cable news and all the regular news stations. I think, people will start to notice. So I think that it might hurt Hillary slightly. But like I said, I think that she's pretty confident that she has her left flank wrapped up.
How do people follow you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter at Naomi S. Riley. And I actually have a new book out. It's called The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians.
So, and go out and get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one.
Thank you very much.
All right. Nice. Thanks, Avion. Larry, thanks for coming on. It's Monday. The mouth will eventually catch up, but don't plan on it much before 8. We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine.
I've got a stomach pain.
Impact every day. And it's 6:42. Congratulations, Dr. Most. He and his friend Larry did very well at the beautiful Butterfield Golf Club over the weekend in a big shot tournament there. And you lost, but you did very well.
We did great. I shouldn't say we. It's, although it is a team, Larry played great. Larry Ryan, great guy. And not only that, he played phenomenal this week. So I was very fortunate to have a great horse.
Yes, and his back still hurts this morning from carrying
it. It does, yes.
Meanwhile, I want to thank everybody at the Springbrook and Naperbrook golf courses that hosted the Naperville City Championship this weekend, where I finished a stellar, 14th in my flight or something. So obviously I got it done.
And now they're tapping wells because you drank all their water.
I did drink all their water.
Yeah.
I didn't keep a full count, Doc, but I think the last time I peed was last Wednesday. Yeah, and I've had about a dozen bottles of water a day.
Well, I think the good thing is a lot of these golf tournaments that do these in the summer are well prepared. I mean, at Butterfield, we had ice water every other tee. So, yeah. I mean, they were ready for us, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you have to, because just briefly, this heat stroke thing in heat fatigue and heat whatever you want to call it is a very dangerous thing. And you taught us a couple of summers ago that when you get to a point where you stop sweating, you're in trouble.
Yeah, we probably should have talked about this last Monday, but I wasn't looking at the weather forecast in advance because we had the perfect setup for it. We had heat indexes well north of 100, and we had that relative humidity, 70-80%. And people may not understand, but the two of those are very important because the way our body cools itself is we sweat, and when we sweat, air rushes across the skin and it cools itself. Well, when you get that relative humidity up above 70%. That humidity, as that water on your skin, has nowhere to go. So yeah, so the signs that you need to look for: excessive thirst. Yeah, you're going to be thirsty. You want to keep up. You want to make sure you try to stay ahead, to be honest with you. And those are the big important things. So you start to get weak. You start to get a little headache. Those are the times where you say, "Hold on, get back inside, get somewhere cool and comfortable, and try to get some fluids in you."
And again, you like the water Gatorade back and forth.
I do, because when you're outside, everyone knows, God, my skin's all salty now. Well, it's because you're losing electrolytes as well. So replenishing that with just straight water, you're going to end up, you can get some salt depletion where you get a little nausea, you get the muscle cramps, get a little dizzy. There you need not only the fluids, but you also need some of that sodium, some of that potassium back in your system. So I'm a big fan of alternating water and Gatorade if you know you're going to be out for a long time. And like you said, the people that stop sweating, those are the ones that we get the most concerned about. That's an emergency.
And you can't, it's like friends don't let friends drive drunk. It's friends don't let friends die in the heat because, and Doc, you've gone through this, where you get to a point where you're not mentally all there and able to make the right decision for you. And you have somebody that is paying attention and goes, dude, listen, you sit down. And yeah, this is over right now. And you pack. We actually packed Dr. Most in ice for 3 or 4 days. That's how overheated he got.
Cryogenics. You know, you joke about, you said you haven't peed since last Wednesday, which we know you have, hopefully.
Yeah.
But you should be drinking enough water to the point of where you are able to.
Correct.
Use the facilities. How about that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times I heard people today or this weekend, you know, I didn't have to go to the bathroom and I was out there for 4 hours drinking a lot of water. And it's, yeah, that body is going to try to maintain the amount of fluid that it needs. And it's going to hold on to it, especially when you're losing it as quickly as you can in the heat.
I had a golf cart, but in the golf cart, I had an IV attached to me at all times.
Yeah.
It's the only safe way to go.
But it was. This is one of those where heat stroke could come in. And like I said, that's the one where you don't want to just give these people fluids. Those are the ones where you do get some clothes off of them as much as you can, get some water on their skin and cool them down, but get them to a hospital. That's an emergency. This is when the body's ability to cool itself has gone haywire and is not working, and you need medical attention for that one.
Remember, Andre, I used to have the golf tournament that I fronted a few years ago, and you and Devlantis were there, and I immediately asked you to take your clothes off because of the heat, and you said, we just started playing. We're fine.
Yes, I do remember
that. I was just being careful, Doc.
You were just trying to help us out, right?
We call that preventative medicine.
Mm-hmm. Is that what they call it now?
Back to school time already. Can you believe it? We'll come back. We'll talk about school physicals and what schools are trying to do to reduce sodium in the school lunch menus. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Back or Bach? I'm having trouble speaking this morning, Doc.
Well, it's okay for your job. You don't have to worry about that.
That's a good point. Thanks for clearing that up for me.
Yep.
Back to Dr. Kevin Most. Back to school time. Do I need a physical?
Yes, you do. Yep. It's kind of funny. Oh, this is the time of the year that doctors, we don't all cringe, but we all go, okay, you know, how many are we going to get today where it's like, oh my gosh, Timmy wants to start football practice and he can't go to football practice until he has his physical and I didn't know it and he needs it today. So, the well-planned parent who can get those physicals on the books is great.
And the sooner you do it, the better.
Yeah, the sooner you do it, the better. You know, people have to realize that the school physical is good for a year. So really, you could have gotten it in June, and it would have been good for the entire next year. But very important that you get those done. A lot of parents look at it as, oh my gosh, it's just another check in the box. Let me go and take care of this. And really, it's much more important than that for many, many reasons.
Well, the sports stuff. I mean, you're not going to play sports without a physical, but what about kids that don't play sports?
Yeah, well, kids that don't play sports, you still have to understand. If you look at a young 9-year-old and you see him standing there, can you tell me what his blood pressure is?
Mm-mm.
Can you tell me how he's been doing on the growth chart? Has he stayed on his trajectory for a growth chart? Has he dropped off?
Okay, I don't know anything. It's clear.
Exactly. There's a lot of information that's gathered in that physical that is, it's preventative maintenance for a young child as they grow. And then also, you know, all the vaccinations, obviously, that they need as well.
So the annual stuff is to keep the benchmarks going as well. So next year we can compare, and if something comes up down the road, we've got a trail, right? A track to refer to.
It is. Totally. You know, we really want to make sure that they stay on their track, make sure, because if they start to fall off their track, we start to think of things. Okay, is their thyroid function okay? Is there a possibility that there's underlying diabetes here? What are some of the other issues, you know, with growth hormone? Is there something going on in this individual that if captured early enough can be treated and prevented from having any long-term problems?
I would tell you, too, and I know you've talked to me about this. If you have a regular pediatrician or a regular doctor your kid's seen, it's good because there's a relationship with them. And by the time the kid's in junior high or in those preteen stages, you know, I hope it's not the case, but in some places, certainly parents have trouble talking to kids about drugs or about sex or about things like that. And it's not the doctor's job to give them the birds and the bees talk, but your kid might be able to hear something from a doctor that they don't necessarily hear anymore at home.
You hit on a very good point, and parents will sometimes say, why did the doctor ask me to step out of the room? You know, and part of that is modesty for the child. We don't want to do parts of the exam while the parents in the room, so we're going to ask them to step out. But also it allows the doctor to ask questions in a very comfortable fashion. You know, do you feel peer pressure about smoking? You know, can we talk about smoking? Can we talk about drug use? Can we talk about some of these things that you are going to be exposed to? You know, and then also give them the confidence to say that, hey, if any of those occur, we are here as an asset for you. We are here. We'd be more than happy to help you. But that time of education, sometimes parents are going to stay in the room and say, hey, you know, his dad smokes, and I want you to tell him all the bad things that are going to happen with smoking. And I'm like, okay, I can do that, but how about making dad quit smoking first, because that's what he's seeing every day.
Yep.
So, you know, the doctor is there for those important things to take care of some of the peer pressure issues, as well as to make sure that the physical exam of the child is great.
Doc, at what age should the patient, I guess, go from pediatrician to regular doctor? And or keep it like Ross and Friends, you know, keep your pediatrician. And what age should a girl first see her the gynecologist?
Yeah, so two great questions. Pediatricians, you know, pediatricians take care of kids all the way up to 18. And as a matter of fact, we have some pediatricians that take care of individuals that go well into their 20s. Those are usually individuals who might have Down syndrome or might have some childhood abnormality that they're going to continue to follow them. So really that transition there is probably right around college time. It's like some people have family practice doctors instead of pediatricians, and they'll stay with them for their continuum. As far as young females, I'm a big fan of getting them in around 11 or 12 to talk to the gynecologist, and to, because a lot of things start happening to the woman's body at that time. They start to have questions and concerns, and sometimes the gynecologist can handle those a little bit better. And most pediatricians are going to encourage that as well.
We're going to run out of time here, but we know that sodium is dangerous, not just to adults, but to kids as well. I would love it if there was a great low-sodium diet that made sense. It was a go-to realistic in-the-world diet where you could do in the fast-paced world that we live in low sodium. But the fact is there's too much salt in everything, right?
There is. There's too much salt. We in the United States just take way too much salt. And so the FDA last week came out and said, hey, you know, right now in the United States, we're taking 3,400 milligrams of salt. FDA says, hey, let's try to decrease that to 2,300. So cut it by a third. Put things in perspective. A Subway 6-inch Italian sandwich, 3,200. So you have a sandwich, you can't have any...
You're done for the day.
Correct. And Mary Sandberg told me that she ate a ultra-thin Home Run in pizza,
yeah.
You know, 2,600. Now, Home Run in makes fairly healthy pizzas, and they've really done a great job in cutting back on their salt. But still, that's a lot of sodium, and other pizzas have a lot more, but that's still a lot of sodium.
Oh, yeah, she blew up like a puffer fish the next morning. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
You're done for the day. And we're just talking about heart disease, you know, sodium is probably one of our biggest reasons for elevated blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. So it's good for ourselves as our bodies to really be careful about how much sodium we take in. Look at the nutritional markings on anything you drink. I have a Gatorade right in front of me right now. I could tell you there's 160 milligrams of sodium in it. Look at that. Start to think about those things, because it's going to make your blood pressure lower and make you healthier.
Send me your favorite low-sodium diet, will you?
Yeah, I will. I definitely will.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
You got it.
That's Dr. Kevin Most. And again, that's Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Let me just reiterate that the Democratic National Committee remains neutral in this primary based on our rules. Let me state again, we are not putting our thumb on the scale for any candidate. The function as the chair is to neutrally manage the primary.
It's what we talked about 6 months ago. I mean, there's no question to my mind, and I think no question to any objective observer's mind, that the DNC was supporting Hillary Clinton, was in opposition to our campaign. So I'm not quite shocked by this. And that is why, many, many months ago, I made it clear that I thought Debbie Wasserman Schultz should resign, should step down.
All I ask is for a fair contest. Just a fair contest and a nice bowl of soup. And maybe for the grandkids to call once or twice. Would it kill him? Bernie Sanders is not wrong. He's got a bad haircut, and he's a little frightening, but he's not wrong. Jason DeSanto joins us. Jason is a professor of anything he damn well pleases at Northwestern University. Why do I never remember specifically what you teach? Do you change a lot, or am I an idiot?
Do I have to answer one way or the other?
What are you teaching this semester?
I'm teaching in the School of Communication right now, Steve.
Oh, you are?
Some executive communication.
Okay.
For executives.
Trying to teach people how to manage?
How to lead.
How to lead. Okay, good.
Leadership communications, how to persuade, influence. And I do that in the law school also.
But one of your true areas of expertise is political speech.
Nice of you to say.
I believe that. I've always believed that. And now we go into a week of very, very important speeches. Bernie Sanders for Hillary, Hillary for Hillary, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Frusengluschen, Farfignugen for what? Her new Uber job? What is she doing?
A diplomatic taking of leave, perhaps.
She has to go. She has to go.
Well, it probably should have happened a while ago.
Right.
And one of the reasons that's probably true is, speaking of communications, she was never really the best advocate for the party that perhaps the party could have had. I mean, as a party builder, I defer to others on the specifics and the fundraising facts relating to that. But,
yeah.
But simply as somebody who watches communications, I never took her as somebody that I would run out as the primary advocate for any position that I would be taking.
Well, the DNC prior to the last, 5 to 10 years, and the RNC heads were supposed to be background folks who picked up the phone and asked ranchers to give them checks and tried to maintain the handling of the message of the party and then manage the convention. But we weren't supposed to know who they were, generally speaking, right?
Well, that's changed over time. I mean, you can go back maybe even to the 1970s, a chairman like Robert Strauss, who was chairman of the DNC, and then into the 90s, people like Rich Bond, and then later...
Yeah, so we didn't know any of them, is my point.
Well, we didn't know them very well, but they would show up. They would turn up on a Sunday morning program, and so you could at least hear from them and hear what position they were going to take, and you could judge whether
But why are
or not...
they around so much now? Is it because we have so much more time to fill?
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think there's always a demand for surrogates and for advocates, and here are these people that should be able to do that better than anybody. We certainly see a lot of Rance Priebus these days.
Yeah. Also, you know, arguably not the best spokesperson, but I do feel bad for Rance Priebus. He looks like he's been, you know, punch drunk for about 6 months because he's trying to manage Donald Trump.
Well, there's a great article by Mark Leibovich a few weeks ago in the New York Times, in the New York Times Magazine, about Priebus being so beleaguered by Trump and just saying in these successive meetings that he would have with him, well, you know, I think he's getting ready to pivot. I think the pivot is coming.
He'd like him to pivot off a cliff.
And Leibovich concluded that really what Priebus and some other Republicans wanted was to build a wall between themselves and Trump and have Trump pay for it.
Very nice.
They were after.
Very nice. Hey, speaking of that, we didn't talk about this on Friday. Did you guys see that somebody in L.A. built a tiny wall around Donald Trump's Hollywood star? Like a tiny concrete wall actually around the star. It was brilliant. You know, maybe 3 or 4 inches high all the way around his star. Dave, would you like a wall around your plaque on the WGN Walker?
I'm okay without one, but thanks for offering, Steve.
Does that beg the question, though? Why does Donald Trump have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
No, that system has been known for a while. Would you like a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Sure.
That'll be $3,500.
Did Trump get to choose what kind of star he wanted?
That's a good question. I don't know that.
There's some stars he might not like as much as others.
Yeah. What's funny is there's a Steve Cochran who was an actor in the 50s who apparently has a star on the Walk of Fame. And whenever I have friends in L.A. who come across it, they go, I didn't know. I go, yeah, I know. I don't like to talk about it very much. Usually Midwestern radio big shots don't get the star out there, but no, in my case. Jason DeSantis here, Northwestern University professor and also superhero. His power is speech analysis. Yeah. Crime fighter. All right, so let's start with Bernie Sanders. What does Bernie Sanders need to say, and what do you expect him to say? Because those often aren't the same things.
I think Bernie Sanders needs to do what most runners-up in these primaries need to do, and that's at some point try to unify the party. He's already done that to a great extent, saying he was going to endorse Hillary Clinton, and that in that way he's gone further than some others have done in the past, including people like Ted Kennedy, for example, in 1980 after a fierce primary battle with Jimmy Carter.
Right.
And what I would expect is he's going to say that he supports Hillary Clinton. That's what's typically done in these speeches, although what's interesting to see is the different ways that candidates get there when they've lost in these speeches over the years. Some are much more effusive than others. In fact, one of the more effusive in Democratic politics was actually Hillary Clinton in 2008 for Barack Obama.
Right.
And then it'll be a takedown of Trump.
do you expect that to play out that way? Because I do. What you've just described is would be my guess is the speech he'll do.
I think so. And I think the one other element that'll be there that you do see in some of these prior speeches, Gary Hart in 1984 and Kennedy in 1980 in particular, particularly when they're running from the left and the mainstream or more moderate candidate wins, is you will see an articulation of what they fought for and how those principles endure. And that means that the rhetoric will be a little bit more to the left than perhaps Hillary's and the convention as a whole. But in the end, it'll be grounded in the idea of we know who the enemy is and we have to fight him. It's actually what Ted Kennedy did in 1980,
right.
Just a vicious takedown of Ronald Reagan that year,
right.
Cleverly executed.
As only Teddy K could.
As only Bob Shrum, his speechwriter, and Teddy right. Kennedy could do.
Now, the supporters of Bernie Sanders are not happy about the fix being in. Does he need to mention that? Does he need to acknowledge, other than the support, what happened at the DNC?
I don't think he needs to mention it. I think he merely needs to say we fought against the tide, and the tide can be both.
You've seen the horror movie where we traced the call, and the call was coming from in the house. The call's in the house. They're in the house. Is that what, that's the speech?
That is exactly the speech. It's almost like you've gone forward and then back in time.
I really have.
You've seen it,
really
and
have.
It's Tuesday morning,
really have. Really
and
have.
We know what happened, and it was 14 hours long, the speech.
I think this is going to be the biggest brush under the rug, though, don't you? I mean, Debbie Wasserman, I don't even think...
There's a curly-haired elephant in the room.
If
somebody's got to address it.
She'll come out if she gavels it and if she speaks. Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. There's going to be boos, but I don't think you're going to see Bernie or any of the other candidates addressing it. They're just going to... I just think, anyway, don't you, Jason? They're going to be rah-rah Hillary.
Andrea, I agree with you. I think they're going to just try to put it right behind him.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen, and we saw it happen at the Republican convention. When you don't put behind you a story that can be distracting and you let it linger for another day, you miss opportunities. And that's
but in defense of Trump, there's so much crap to cover up. I mean, you know, the convention was only 4 days long. You
did
know,
you say in defense of Trump?
Yeah, yeah, because okay. when you shove your foot up your various places that far over and over again, there's not enough speech time in the world to cover all that.
Well, when
or
you speak,
ignore all that.
When you speak for 75 minutes in your acceptance speech, you're covering some ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Voldemort at the mic. All right. So we fast forward to Thursday. Hillary speaks. Now, we don't know what's going to transpire between now and then. But let's say nobody talks about Curly until then. Does she bring it up? Does she say, I'd like to thank Debbie Wasserman Schultz for all her hard work? Is there any reference to her at all?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. No, by that time, that's 70. If it weren't appropriate to mention on Monday,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
certainly not appropriate to mention on Thursday or any other day.
What about a Debbie Wasserman Schultz dunk tank where you could raise money for candidates in the down ballot?
You would raise a lot of money.
Yeah, you would.
Yes, you would. Down ballot would never have so much funding. No, she needs to put it bluntly, take care of herself by talking about others.
So why allow this DNC distraction to be around?
Soft landing. I mean, think about it. If you just say she's fired,
yeah,
it's true she won't be around, but that's a little more dramatic, and maybe she has an incentive to leak, to be more
of
a... Does
she have something on Hillary we need to know about? Let's bring Hillary out right now.
She was the head of the DNC. I mean, I don't know that she has anything on the nominee, the presumptive nominee, but... I mean, there are a lot of emails flying around. I mean, I'm sure she would know something that could
be damaging.
Did
you see what Donna Brazile said yesterday? Donna Brazile, the senior Democrat liaison for CNN yesterday said, there's a lot of emails still to come. So we got a lot more stuff we're going to have to apologize for.
Well, this is the problem with email.
Yeah.
I simply think that there is a question that has to be answered about whether or not she should be gaveling it in. But I think the idea is that if you sort of give her a soft landing and shunt her to the beginning and then at the end, then you don't really have a big difficulty. As opposed to if you
bad idea.
Well,
she needs to be out of the room.
She's not going to be in the room. Except
she
just,
was she going to video gavel? She going to gavel by Skype?
Well, that's like George W. Bush at the 2008 convention where he was brought in via videotape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's possible.
Yeah.
In a boo-proof room.
with a gavel.
In a boo-proof room. Jason, when Hillary speaks on Thursday, I think we're going to see, well, we are going to see more star power to this convention. Obama and Biden on Thursday. We're going to, obviously, they already put out the Hollywood list of performers, Paul Simon. They have bigger performers, bigger names. But what do you see in Hillary Clinton's speech on Thursday night? Do you see her outlining what she's going to do, her platform, or going after Trump, or both?
It's both. I mean, the job in these speeches is to tell people who you are, what you've learned, what you believe, and what you're going to do, and do it in a way that contrasts with your opponent. You want to set the frame for the contrast for the campaign. So a part of that is biography, and believe it or not, telling people where you came from, what you've learned along the way, and then seeing how that affects your view of the problems that are affecting people and how you will go about changing them. Sounds very simple, but the tone of it can be very different than what we heard in the Republican convention. I mean, I think one thing Trump did well in his speech was to speak directly to the anxiety that people feel, particularly in Rust Belt states, owing, of course, to economic circumstances, but also to security concerns, but also to the changes in this country in the last 20 or 25 years. Globalization, interdependence, 9/11, Great Recession, Occupy movement, the Tea Party movement, all those things are symptomatic of mass changes and a lack of trust in traditional institutions. To some extent, that's what Bernie Sanders is arguing about. So Hillary has to be seen as somebody who understands the depth of that problem. She's somebody who seems like she's got a 10-point plan for everything, and she's very good and wonky and understands policy. But if people don't trust that you understand the depth of the problem, they're not really going to care about what your solution is.
Yeah, and she's got to be more aspirational as well. Now, we're going to run out of time. Bill Clinton's speech is the highlight of the week for me because, you know, he could make a bad night at a casino sound like a good time for everybody. So is he going to tell anecdotes about their life together that nobody really believes exists? Is he going to talk about her as a grandmother? What's he going to do?
Those two things for sure, but how they relate to how it informs Hillary's policies. I think Clinton is the most fascinating speaker in this convention in particular because of the very long, strange trip he's had at Democratic conventions, from his overlong nomination speech of Michael Dukakis to being the nominee to being consigned to Monday night during the Al Gore and John Kerry conventions to keep him as far away as possible from the nominees, to essentially articulating the best defense of Barack Obama's first 4 years that any speaker gave in the 2012 convention, better than the candidate himself gave.
Oh, for sure.
And now he's giving the spouse speech, which of course puts him in the Michelle Obama, Ann Romney, Barbara Bush, Elizabeth Dole, Eleanor Roosevelt category.
He's the first dude.
Yeah. So I think it's fascinating in terms of a mix of different genres.
And what night is he? Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night. Listen, as usual, you're right about all of it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Will you come back?
I might not be right, but I'm here.
Will you come back and will you come back and explain it all to us after it happens? And can we reach you by phone this week if anything blows
up? Absolutely. Okay. My phone is available at all times.
Twitter, where do we find you?
At Jason DeSanto.
Okay. That's a little D or a big D?
It's a big D with a huge heart. I've got a big heart, Steve.
At Jason DeSanto.
Thanks.
Northwestern University, if you haven't already signed up for classes, feel free to do so. And if you haven't actually gotten into the school, use my name. It's 7:31. We're back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Here's a give. Jackson to the 10, to the 5, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown! And the give will be Justin Jackson straight ahead. Touchdown! Justin Jackson gives to Jackson. Jackson bursts through to the end zone. Touchdown, Northwestern. Justin Jackson, who sticks the landing in the end zone.
That was Justin Jackson's ringtone on his phone. How cool is that? Hey, Coach, how are you?
Good morning.
How cool is that to have Dave Bennett doing the call of a bunch of your touchdowns?
He's Mr. Cat.
He's Mr. Cat. Pull that mic up a little bit right in front of your face.
He's unbelievable. I mean, he's a legend.
Nice to see you guys. It's Big Ten Day. Want to introduce who you brought in with you?
Well, I don't have to. Dave already did. I mean, he's galloping into the end zone. Justin Jackson, the ball carrier, to my left.
Now, you don't get to hear the great Dave Bennett do those calls. Had you heard that before? You just heard it now?
I hadn't.
Would you like it on several copies so you could share it with your friends?
I don't put him on the spot, Steve.
Yes. Jump drives and various other things.
I think they'd like that.
Maybe. You know, I kind of like the idea of that being his voicemail. Hello, you've reached Justin Jackson galloping into the end zone.
Well, it's Big Ten Day. Explain what that means.
Well, we get to spend 2 days with our friends in the media and answer, I think, the same questions for two straight days and really kick off the football season. It's that time. And, you know, exciting week in Chicago. We've got the Cubs Sox and Big Ten Media Days.
You know, didn't it seem like a subtle shot from Coach there that we're going to answer the same questions? How about this? How's your Pokemon Go going, huh?
Never played it, never will.
You're not getting that from every other place up and down the dial,
absolutely
are you?
Not, no.
Yeah,
no.
Right, exactly. What are you excited about? What are you concerned about?
Well, excited about the chemistry that we have. And, you know, JJ can probably talk about it. This is probably as close of a team that he's been a part of. You can see it by the way that our upperclassmen have been working with our true freshmen that have been here for 5 weeks. And just watch the camaraderie. That's going to be the glue that keeps us together when things get hard. What am I concerned about? Well, the unknown. Where, you know, as we get into camp, we've got to improve in a lot of areas. And are we going to be able to make those strides and steps, you know, in all three phases? So I that's my concern, but I think everybody has it throughout the country.
JJ, can we call you JJ? Is that cool?
Of course.
What did they call you at Glenbard when you were in school? Were you JJ?
Yeah.
And listen, do you feel extra pressure that you got to take these freshmen who are just coming in, or do you like beating them up like their big brother?
It's fun. You know, they've come in and done a great job so far. You know, I remember when I was a freshman, you don't have any idea what's going on.
Aren't you scared to death?
Yeah, you're just worried about everything.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's the wrong things, but you just got to take them under your wing and really kind of take them through everything step by step because, you know, like I said, their mind's everywhere. They're thinking about the things they don't need to be thinking about at this time. So,
well, you go from being the big shot in high school, wherever you went to high school, and now here you are and you're in Evanston, you're on the lake, you're at Northwestern, one of the biggest programs in the country. You better be scared. You better have some butterflies.
Yeah, you know, it's a big stage, you know, going from high school to Big Ten. And just the idea of that, I think, might scare some people, but like I said, it's, you know, it's a team thing, and you're not by yourself, and that's kind of how I always looked at it. You go in and you have a game plan and all these things, and you have the brothers to your right and left, and that's really what the summer's about, is getting close with those guys. So when you go into the season, you have that trust and you don't feel all the pressure on yourself.
Coach, do you do this sort of bonding differently than other programs, the way you line guys up? Are you personally involved in that whole mentor thing?
Yeah, I am. And you know, we start with the big brother program where we try to marry up a senior or junior with a true freshman. And some years it's worked out great. Some years it's been a miss, but this year is probably the best that I've seen. And, you know, we're going to need that. I mean, there's no question you're going to face adversity in our game. And we don't have any clue yet who freshman-wise are going to help us. But one, two, three, who knows, however many are going to help us this year. And to see the transition, the way the guys have handled it, it's been great.
You know, Dave, it's funny. Sports does this so much better than the regular business world does. Because, and I'm dead serious when I say this, you get new employees that come in. There ought to be that sort of mentor relationship with new employees as well. I just think it helps everybody.
And I would tell you that Northwestern, I think, does it better than a lot of other institutions, because I see the way that your players interact with their mentors, and not just the upperclassmen with the freshmen coming in, but also guys outside the football program, former players who come back and help these guys.
Yeah, it's special. And you know, you want to talk about it, JJ, a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great program. You know, we just had a mentors barbecue where we got to sit down and talk with not only our mentors, but, you know, all the other mentors too. And it's just a great event. You know, you get to sit down, have some food with some great guys who are taking time out of their, you know, busy lives to come back and help us. And, you know, we love that. We appreciate that. And we try and, you know, send that down to the freshmen when they're coming in, just that love and that family atmosphere. I think it really helps guys.
Yeah, you know, academically, I know recruiting is always a challenge, but you seem to find the best players in the country. But I do think it's advantageous in this mentor thing to have kids who are academically really getting it done as well, because they're, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody here, but frankly, you're a more rounded person because your studies matter to you and everything else in the world.
Well, you try to, that's our model. You know, you want to recruit to that niche, and that's what makes us unique. And from identification through all the programs that we have to, you know, JJ's got a couple years left, but, you know, as they matriculate out of the program across the stage at graduation, we've figured out already what it is that maybe we don't want to do, but they're definitely prepared for life. And, you know, that's using the game, that's using college football to get yourself prepared instead of the opposite. And, you know, we believe we do it pretty strong, and the guys really buy into it, and it's really helped.
He's a sixth, JJ is, all-time Northwestern running. I think I'm right about this, sixth, and he's just one bust out. Let me tell you, one of these tackles or guards misses the block. That's a problem because he's only, what do you need, 35, 40 yards? I think, and you're up to fourth. It's unbelievable. Oh, don't act like you haven't memorized the stats. First, you act surprised when you hear Anna doing your touchdown calls. All right, so let's do this. Quick traffic. We'll come back, and we'll talk to these guys a little more. If you want to follow Coach Fitz on Twitter, where do they follow you?
At Coach Fitz 51, I think, is what it is. Yeah.
Okay. You were really active in Twitter in the early days, and you sort of got away from it. Where are you at now? Too much Pokemon Go?
Well, no. Too much travel baseball.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. Those kids, yeah. Your kids, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, the team at home.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Thanks. Have a great rest of the day. Go Cats.
Northwestern coming off the fourth 10-win season in program history. And Coach Pat Fitzgerald, 11 seasons?
This will be season number 11, yes.
It's gone fast, hasn't it?
You know, Stacy and I went to dinner last night, and we were talking about and just reminiscing a little bit and thinking about Randy and Tammy, and then thinking back to 10 years ago when we were coming down to the kickoff luncheon, and I was just named head coach about a month prior. And
JJ, by the way, he was 11.
Yeah,
when that happened, just so you know.
To say that we had a little stress in our life would be an understatement. Stacy sure. was pregnant, you know, all the change. So it's a little bit calmer this trip.
Some highlights coming up, too, from the schedule. Opening of Western Michigan, right?
We sure are. Outstanding football team. PJ's done a great job there in Kalamazoo, and going to be a challenging opener, to say the least, and four straight at home. It's going to be critically important that we start fast. It always is, but especially when, you know, we go now to the nine league games, and this year it's four home, five away. We've got to win while we're at home. It's critically important we keep the Ryan Field home field advantage.
How do you feel about playing home games under the lights?
Well, I think high school is what reminds guys of these night games. You know, you go back to your fun time when you were in high school, and playing under the lights is fun, and Ryan Field is a pretty neat venue at night. What do you think, JJ?
I love it. I remember, I think, Nebraska my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of the, I guess, Ball State last year, and it's just a different type of atmosphere. So fun. Like Coach said, it reminds you of high school, you know, playing under the lights Friday nights, but I think everyone gets up for it. The only downside is just waiting all day. You know, you're just waiting in a hotel room watching everyone else play. But when it comes down to it, it's the best time.
You know, JJ, we didn't have lights when I played. Lights hadn't been invented yet, so they just set bonfires around the field.
They carried torches around the field.
Yeah, yeah. Dave?
So last year, 10-2. And here's a question you're going to get asked later on today, I'm sure, repeatedly, because I've already been asked this on some radio shows. So you get off to the great start, lose to Michigan, lose, and you come home, lose to Iowa. And at that point, people say, okay, it's like 2013 again, and the loss to Ohio State, right, which kind of sent you in the wrong direction. And what changed? What was the difference last year, because you went 5-0 from that point on?
Well, first of all, I think the guys responded well. We both Iowa and Michigan games, we prepared well. We had great weeks of practice. We just didn't execute. We didn't adjust. Probably played our worst two regular season games up front. You know, we lost the line of scrimmage, and we really didn't give ourselves a chance to win those football games. Michigan in the first half and Iowa in the second half, kind of two different games. But to the guys' credit, we handled it well. We continued on the path of that improvement mentality that I think every football team needs to have. And then we won a lot of close games. You know, we were in some dogfights down the stretch, and you know, I think we've got confidence in those games, and we hope to draw upon that. We'll be in close games again this year. We just, you know, been at Northwestern way too long, and you've called too many games. You know, there are very few blowouts, and very, you know, we're entertaining, if not anything else. So we'll be back there, and I thought the guys handled those situations well.
With the stress involved, Dave, have you had your preseason physical?
No, not yet, but I get it next month.
I'd hate to see four or five, you know, cardiac moments at the end, and we actually have to call your cardiologist.
I've had my share, believe me, with these guys. Justin, in 2 years, has done some pretty amazing things on the football field. And last year in the game, I think at Wisconsin, carried, 35 times, something like that, somewhere in the mid-30s. You've got some depth in your backfield. Warren Long, you have John Moten, Austin Anderson. Are these guys going to get more carries? Does he want the ball every time?
Well, there's no doubt he wants the ball every play. I mean, people complained about our passing attack last year, not JJ. He was ecstatic. You know, keep running it, coach. We're good. Why aren't you giving it to me more?
But
those guys have all earned, to this point, you know, especially Warren. Mm-hmm. Has earned a role on our offense, and where does that fit, and how does that play out? You know, time will tell. But without a doubt, Warren was a young man that a year ago I thought had an outstanding season. And as we, you know, you go to in the offseason, you look at your cutups, you look at
a lot of things that you accomplish positively and negatively. We felt like we needed to get the ball in Warren's hands more. So will that impact JJ's carries? Yeah, probably not. It may impact some other guys. You know, we had Solomon Vault in the backfield last year. He'll now move out to wide receiver. But a couple of years ago when we had Noah and Jason Wright, we were able to do some fun things with two running backs in the game, and that'll play out here throughout camp. But definitely Warren and JJ are two guys that have earned it.
We talked about this a little bit off the air, too. How do you beat the heat when it gets this hot? I know you're conditioning. I know you're practicing. Got to be careful. Stay hydrated. What else?
Yeah, it comes down to preparation, making sure your body's okay when you're going into it. You know, and our training staff does a great job, and our strength and conditioning staff is very hands-on with everything. We make sure our nutrition staff, they're making sure we're getting our electrolytes and everything. And, yeah, we just want to be safe because when it comes down to it, the team that's the most healthy going into the season usually is the one that's successful, and that's we were able to stay pretty healthy last year as compared to 2 years ago.
I think you got the nice aerodynamic, cool haircut going, too. High and tight on the sides, and then you got a little bit on top. Would that be a good look for me, Dave, what JJ's wearing?
I think it would look great on you, Steve. Yeah. In fact, I think that could possibly be done, could Photoshop it.
Right. It's a little bit of an Odell Beckham Jr., isn't it? You got a little bit of that going on?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the look nowadays. Just
well, you can tell because of the way I'm wearing mine.
Yeah.
Well, don't they have that golf visor that has, you know, for those that are a little thin up top,
hair.
That has
the
Yeah.
Careful.
I'm just... look at this haircut. Come on. I got a bowl of soup with this, you know?
Well, listen, I know it's going to be a long day, but I'm glad you guys came in here for the home team because we're very excited about the season coming up in the partnership. I'd like to publicly invite you to return to another season of the Steve Cochran Show. Can we count on you on the phone with us?
Absolutely. It's the highlight of my week.
I doubt that, but I appreciate you saying it. Yeah.
And just real quick, you have a big event coming up this Sunday also, which we probably ought to get a word in for, the Run for Walk.
Yeah, we sure do. 4.1 miles. Randy wore 41 when he was at Miami of Ohio, and it's a great race throughout Evanston to celebrate Coach Walk and the Walker family. So it's a Run for Walk, and you go to nusports.com, and you can look it up. It's a great event. It's really grown into one of those special running events here at the in the middle of the summer, and look forward to seeing everybody in Evanston on Sunday.
Yeah, and the weather's going to be a little more reasonable than this weekend, so
yes,
it'll be great. Enjoy your day, fellas.
It's going to be fun. Thanks, guys.
Northwestern football starts when?
September 3rd, Western Michigan Broncos, 11 a.m. kick.
And who's going to make the call on that game?
I think WGN Radio will have all the play-by-play.
And you'll do?
Yeah, I'll probably do it.
Who's the guy next?
Actually, you know what? I won't. My regular partner, Ted Albrecht, is going to miss that game because he's attending a wedding. And so Dan Persa, former Wildcat quarterback, is going to sit in.
Oh, great.
He's really shy. You're going to have to really pull that out. It's going to be a difficult day.
And he's not very opinionated.
No.
I don't know if you've noticed
that. That Pennsylvania comes out in him a lot, doesn't it? Yeah.
So stand by mid-third quarter when Emmett throws him out of the booth.
Never.
Yeah, there you go. Great to see you, Coach. And JJ, nice to meet you, man.
Thank you.
Have a great season. Sure. Stay healthy.
I'll try.
All right, then. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Well, first, Chris Sale. Now this word just got to me just seconds ago that Dean Richards has taken Larry Potash's suit and cut it to shreds.
No.
You got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah. And he tried to get Pat Tomasulo's suit, but Pat's small and wiry, and he got away.
Didn't take long. Pat's didn't take very long.
How was your weekend, Dean?
Delightful.
Mine too. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, it was great. Steve, how was yours?
Well, very hot, actually. I was playing in a golf tournament, and those generally take place outdoors, and it was quite warm.
I would not have been on a golf course, especially yesterday.
Yeah.
I just walked down the block when I finished my award-winning Sunday morning radio show yesterday.
Yeah.
I just walked down the block to run a couple of errands. I felt like I was literally, like when you open an oven door,
yeah,
that's like the blast of furnace that I felt in my face.
Well, there's perspiration, and then there's Saturday and Sunday, and I felt like I jumped in a swimming pool, you know, with my clothes on. And by the way, I have done that, as you know. What?
I think jumping in a swimming pool and passing out in one is a little different.
Well, those are both true. All right, so Star Trek, your big movie of the week, and we'll talk about that. Comic-Con comes and goes.
That's where Larry and Paul, they're off the morning show today, but they're still at Comic-Con.
There you go.
Big fans.
Marcus Dupree, what's the name of your wacky guy there that does all the nerd stuff? Marcus
Dupree.
Marcus, what's the name? Oh, LeShock.
LeShock.
Marcus LeShock.
Marcus Dupree.
Marcus LeShock. Marcus LeShock was complaining early this morning that he never gets to go to Comic-Con.
I don't know why you would want to.
Yeah, it's my question, actually. Is Kim Kardashian fooling around with Taylor Swift's ex-man? And I know you're on pins and needles. And John Oliver getting it done again last night.
Awesome.
Tremendous.
Awesome show last night. But the song that a bunch of artists got together because they're sick and tired of politicians using their music at campaign stops and conventions, like we saw last week, like we're going to see this week. So they have put together kind of a We Are the World-like song. We'll share some of that with you in a minute.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is online, too, so I'll tell her you said hello.
Please.
All right, hold on.
She's got a little time on her hands this week.
I still think you and I'd look great in that curly hair that she does.
You would.
It's 8:16. More coming up with Dean, but first, traffic.
Oh, and we have Marcus Dupree who's going to be joining. He's a football player. Did you know that?
Yeah, he is, actually, yeah.
Philadelphia?
I don't think he's playing anymore. Is he still playing?
No, he's not playing anymore, but I guess.
He played in the old days?
I looked him up while we were chatting.
Yeah. Subject of an ESPN 30 for 30, is that why it's stuck in my head? I think that's right. It's 8:17, and where is Mary today? Do we know?
On a billboard.
Where's Vanderbilt today?
She's on a billboard.
Yeah, she's on a billboard. Okay.
Spending the day up there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720. Oh,
821. And Dean rejoins us now.
He's talking about the Democratic convention. They have a load of celebrities who are going to be appearing at one event or another.
Who's there?
Demi Lovato, Eva Longoria, Bryan Cranston.
What's Bryan Cranston doing?
I don't know.
He's really good.
I'm not really sure.
Hey, did you review this new movie he's in when I was out a couple weeks ago?
The Infiltrator, yes.
Did you like it?
Infiltrator. I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it.
Well, I got to see that then.
Really good straightaway drama, but most of all, you want to see why Bryan Cranston should win an Academy Award, see this movie. He makes the whole movie.
You saw All the Way, right, where he plays LBJ?
I did not see it on Broadway. No,
I mean, you saw the HBO.
The HBO, I did. Yeah, I did not see it.
So good. It's ridiculous.
I tell you, he needs 10 Academy Awards.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
You can get him at Costco, because normally you can only buy one. He can get 10 there.
They're only about 6 inches tall. World's greatest
little
boss.
Collectors. Who else is coming?
Lady Gaga is going to be there. Lenny Kravitz is going to be there. Kesha. Snoop Dogg is going to be there.
Is he?
I'm guessing
he's doing a medical marijuana seminar.
I'm guessing he may be interested in something like that. George Clooney, who normally hosts events and parties and things at the Democratic convention, not appearing at the convention. Well, he's supporting Hillary Clinton. He's just not at the convention.
Tell you why, the old ball and chain's keeping him at the house. You know what I'm saying?
Take that, Scott Baio.
George Clooney is married to one of the most impressive women you could ever find. And all she does, and Clooney's pretty good at making fun of this, while he's out making movies and doing his little high school play thing, as he called it, she's out saving the world and getting political prisoners freed from dictators.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amal.
Uh-huh.
Mommy, can I go to the convention? No.
By the way, in addition to the hard-hitting news I'll be doing this week there, I'm going to go to the Lady Gaga and Kesha after party.
Oh, you are?
So I'll post pictures, Dean, for you.
Make sure you let Kesha and Lady Gaga know it's cheesesteak with whiz.
With whiz.
Yeah, with whiz. Don't go in and go, oh, could I get Swiss?
Yeah.
You'll be beaten up. All right, so Star Trek, the big movie of the weekend?
Almost $60 million, 59 and some change. Huge hit all over the world. It did not quite hit the box office numbers that the first Star Trek movie did, first of this rebooted franchise, but it came very close to it. $2 million all internationally, domestic, everything. So it is well on its way to ensuring there will be a fourth Star Trek movie. They've already announced that, but this is doing really well. Did you see it? Did you go?
I did not go, but I was going to ask you something else. I noticed William Shatner and two or three other older guys in some new TV show coming up. Do you know anything about that?
I do not.
Well, let's find that out. Back to you with the Star Trek news. Who's sick?
It is the actress that plays Uhura in the movie, Zoe Saldana.
Okay.
Very, very beautiful. She disclosed over the weekend that she is suffering from a thyroid condition. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is the name of it. It's a disorder.
It's a restaurant, isn't it?
It's not a restaurant.
Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
It is not. It is not. It's a disorder of the thyroid gland that you probably remember this because it was... I think this was actually well after you came to WGN. Remember, I had to have my thyroid taken out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You had a bit of a scare there.
About 10 years ago, something like that. So I know something about this. And
I was the surgeon.
I didn't really know Steve that well
right.
then.
Right.
He asked me, told me he thought he could do this, and I trusted him. I should have known better when he showed up with a toy doctor bag for the...
I showed up. My manual for it was the operation game.
Right.
When I showed Dean how it would go. And if I go, as long as I don't make you buzz, everything's going to go okay.
One of those awkward situations where you don't want to offend a coworker and you just say yes.
I did the whole thing.
Yeah.
Front, back, and recovery for $9.
No, it turned out perfectly fine. Not only did he take my thyroid out, but he installed a little pocket where I can put my iPhone now.
I did.
That's right in my
neck. And we gave the thyroid away to the seventh caller.
Dean, is that the surgery where you were in the hospital gown with the back open and someone came up to you and said, are you Dean Richards? I just love you.
That was when I was going for a colonoscopy. It was
even better.
That was even more embarrassing.
Yeah, even better.
But anyway, she's got this is a condition which your level of thyroid is low. So it messes with your metabolism when your numbers are off a little bit, but it's easily controlled with medication. But she's doing okay.
The show is referencing William Shatner, Henry Winkler, George Foreman, and Terry Bradshaw in a new show where they're doing a what's the reality show where you have the teams race around the world?
Amazing Race.
The Amazing Race. Yeah. It's like an Amazing Race for old people.
Hmm.
So that's a Shatner thing.
Called That's My Undergarment on the CW.
Comic-Con, anything we need to know?
We know. Remember the movie Room from last year for which Brie Larson won an Academy Award? She is going to be our new Captain Marvel. Isn't that interesting that they've gone with a woman to play Captain Marvel?
Look, anything she does has got to be good.
She's going to be fantastic. They showed off the full cast of the Marvel movie Black Panther that'll star Chadwick Boseman. He's the guy that played Jackie Robinson in the movie 42 not too long ago.
Yep.
They showed trailers for the new Spider-Man movie, for the new Justice League movie. I love Comic-Con because people, you know, get dressed up and they go to this big convention of comic stuff. But a lot of A-listers did the same thing. Henry Cavill, Superman, puts on a mask and he's just walking around, you know, with the masses in the convention hall. Goes up to Will Smith and asks, can I take a picture? Will Smith, who is in Suicide Squad, says, sure. He's taking a picture with him, takes the mask off, and he sees he just took a picture with Superman. And, you know, it was a laugh riot, Steve. That's what it was, a laugh riot.
I saw the mask. It was like, okay, it's just a mask. And it just shows you how tunnel vision people get, you know.
Right. Justin Timberlake, for example, went with a friend of his as Bert and Ernie. They were fully costumed.
That's pretty funny.
With masks on. Andrew Garfield, who played Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Now former Spider-Man. There's a new one in the movie that's going to be coming out. He went as Spider-Man.
I heard the cast of The View went as the cast of The Talk.
That would be interesting comic book selection.
All right, what's going on with the Kim Kardashian thing?
Well, you know, this big war is going on now between Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian and Kanye West.
Why can't they just get along?
Why can't they get along?
I worried about this all weekend.
Kim Kardashian released that recording of a phone conversation for which there now may be some legal ramifications for recording the phone call without
permission. We all heard the chant last week at the RNC, jail Kim Kardashian, jail Kim Kardashian.
Right. So what the latest on this over the weekend, there was an event at which Kim Kardashian was appearing. Who else appears? Taylor Swift's ex-boyfriend, Calvin Harris, he takes a big old picture with Kim Kardashian. They both post it on their websites as a big old take that, Taylor Swift. Calvin Harris with the enemy.
And what does Kanye think?
Kanye has had no comment. He was not in the picture. He may not even be aware that
he's too busy thinking he's still having sex with Taylor Swift.
Said picture. Yeah. Said picture.
And I want to get to the song. This is from last night's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Yeah.
It's a We Are the World of stars who are upset about politicians using their songs, right?
Yeah. He does a whole thing about, you know, the music that was used at the convention last week without permission, candidates and politicians constantly using songs at their campaign stops and at the conventions. So here you have Ann and Nancy Wilson of Heart. All these artists have had their music used by politicians without permission. The Wilson sisters, John Mellencamp, Cyndi Lauper, Josh Groban, Usher, Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragon, Sheryl Crow. Take a listen.
It's that time of year. Campaign season's here. Your waving point, make your speeches while balloons fall everywhere. But we notice something's wrong, and it's gone on way too long. So we're asking you right now, stop using our songs. Yes, turn on your laser light show. Fire up your confetti machine. Bring out your smiling backdrop of ethnic leader-burst teams.
Stop using our music. That's a one and only rule. We didn't write these songs to make your campaign stop seem cool.
Don't use our song.
All right, come on, y'all.
For real, come on.
Don't you use it.
You're lucky if we don't sue.
And what's the deal with all those balloons?
I love it. I love it.
Wait for this last line here from John Mellencamp.
But you're just stealing. But here's one tune we all agree that you can use anytime for free.
It's a kitty walking on an organ keyboard.
That's really well
done. That's an abbreviated version.
That is really well
done. Full song's up on the web.
And if you don't have HBO, get it just so you can see John Oliver do last week.
Hilarious. I mean, they post their segments online, so if you don't have HBO, it is absolutely brilliant. He went over the events of the Republican convention, as I'm sure he will next week with the Democratic convention, but absolutely brilliant.
All right, Debbie Wasserman Schultz coming up in Dean's next segment. Dean's going to do her hair. So stand by for that. It's
got my iron ready.
8:32. We're back with the big story next at 7:20 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I want somebody who will be candid and will tell me, hey, I don't agree with this. Or could you think about it somewhat differently? I don't think I have all the answers. I think that we'll be a good team. I believe we'll work well together. I believe that he will give me his best advice.
I just want to do everything I can to make sure, A, we win, and that, B, the presidency of Hillary Clinton is fantastic. And I think I can, with my two cents, I think I can help that happen.
I do, too. And, well, I just have to add that he plays a mean harmonica.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Got to have a fallback in my life.
Yeah. I watched the 60 Minutes piece, and I like it. I didn't know anything about Tim Kaine. You didn't know anything about Tim Kaine. Now we know a little bit more, and we're going to find out more this week. Eric Edelstein joins us. Are you in Philadelphia?
I am. Got here late last night.
I like Tim Kaine. Am I wrong about that?
You know, no, you're not. And you know how we talked about that old joke about everyone who wants to be president or vice president should be disqualified and we pick from the rest?
Right.
You know, Kane's kind of in that category. I mean, obviously, to run for office, you have to have ego and ambition. But he's never a guy that's a self-promoter. He's never somebody who you ever talk about in the conversation for having that kind of presidential fever. He's a real person, a real guy. He's dedicated his life to public service. And, you know, I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, and when I look at Tim Kaine in, you know, the ultimate bad case scenario, Tim Kaine becomes president or Mike Pence becomes president, I'm taking Kaine. Now, having said that, we're all on pins and needles for the Tim Kaine, Mike Pence VP debate. Woo! Woo! Tingly.
Right. Well, you know, as as must-watch TV as the presidential debate will be, at least that first one. That one will probably be a little bit of a snooze fest.
The least watched.
I think we'll have enough fireworks on the other side.
All right, so the Democrats were handed kind of a cluster out of Cleveland, even though Donald Trump got a bounce in the CNN poll this morning. But it should have been, you know, a two-foot putt. Should have been a gimme. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Friesen Glosch, and Farfik Nugent, because I can't stop saying her name, she has been trouble for quite some time now, and that reached its apex this weekend when a dump of emails, oh, the irony, a dump of emails revealed some real campaign fixing going on at the DNC. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. If it weren't for emails, Steve, there'd be nothing to criticize Democrats for.
People would find something.
I know, but emails seem to be our Achilles heel. Look, I read an anonymous quote of a high-ranking Clinton official who said WikiLeaks did what the Obama White House couldn't do, which is rid us of Chairman Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. But then you got that whole thing with the Russian connection, and apparently the two Russian intelligence services were the ones that hacked into these servers and leaked them, and then you have this suggestion that somehow Trump's in cahoots with Putin. You made his comments last week that he wouldn't necessarily defend a NATO country if they were attacked by Russia, which goes against 50 years of foreign policy protocol for the United States. And then you have this. I mean, Steve, how many times have we said just when you thought you'd know exactly what was going to happen in this election?
Yeah.
Weird stuff happens. So,
yeah, and this Russia thing is a big deal, kids, because it's like a bad Get Smart plot from the 60s. When chaos has come in to interfere with the presidential election. Don't we need to hear from President Obama on this?
Well, I think we do. I mean, particularly if they're really in there trying to affect an election. I think the other thing to put on my partisan hat is, you know, what is Trump's fascination with Putin? Is it simply they share an ideology as kind of demagogues and authoritarians? Or does he have real business interests there with the oligarchs and some of those business ties? And, you know, one of the things that we're going to have the first time in modern presidential history, a major party candidate not release his tax return. So there's something weird going on there. I don't know what it is.
Well,
I do think the White House should speak out, but it's odd.
Yeah, what you just referenced, there's been a longstanding rumor that there are two reasons Trump won't release his tax returns. Well, technically three. One, he's not worth what he said he's worth. Two, he's given away almost nothing charitably. And three, he's made a lot of money out of Russia. And right. All of those are problematic.
I would say so for a potential president of the United States. I mean, it's pretty frightening. Look, I think, you know, look, who the DNC chairs and all that, I don't think there's one voter in the country that makes up their mind on a presidential race based on that. It's a good press story for today, and I know there was some chaos at the Florida delegation breakfast this morning, but I think once Sanders speaks tonight, Michelle Obama speaks, I don't think people are going to pay attention to so much of the emails as much of an unforced error as it is. I do think this Russian piece, I don't think we've heard the last of it.
No, and Donna Brazile, who is very well regarded, I believe, right?
Absolutely, well respected.
Who is the acting chair. And Senator Durbin will be on with us after 9. There's rumors that he's going to get offered the gig. But anyway, Donna Brazile said yesterday that, oh, there's more emails coming. We got more stuff we're going to have to apologize for. She didn't get specific, but that was on CNN last night.
Well, again, you know, it's just sort of silly. People need to understand when you write something down, it's permanent. But even more than that, the judgment that some of those people had, it was stupid, and people should lose their jobs over it. It was just... it was dumb and inappropriate, and I'd be pissed if I were the Sanders people, and they are.
Yeah, and I want to come back after traffic and ask you about some other things that actually pertain to what's going on during the convention, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz can't speak at this convention. She can't gavel. She can't gavel an Uber at this point. She needs to just go away. So when we come back, also tell me if you think she slept on it and she's come to her senses, if she has any.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're here this week to celebrate the unity of the Democratic Party, to make the case why Hillary Clinton should be the next president of the United States.
You still think that?
Of course. Why we need to defeat Donald Trump. I mean, this is the message we want to talk about. We don't want to be sitting here talking about Debbie Wasserman Schultz's handling of the DNC, which was obviously a real problem from the get-go. And we've, as you pointed out, have pointed out throughout the campaign, but now we have this new evidence of problems at the DNC. We need to get by this.
Oh, nobody knows. What a mess. Eric Edelstein is one of the most influential people on the planet. Did you know that?
I think he is.
Yeah. AL Media, that's the best way to keep in touch with you?
Yes, sir.
Unless, I mean, I'm going to give your cell phone number out, but I'll do that out after we hang up.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right, so Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's got to step down. She's got to agree. She's got to take one for the team and go away, doesn't she?
She's not. She should not be the story. Unfortunately, she's put herself in the story, and the best thing she could do is to step down quickly. I mean, I think she said it'd be after the convention, but whether she does that or not, she shouldn't gavel the thing open. I mean, this morning, I understand she tried to speak at the Florida delegation and chaos erupted. You know, she has another problem, Steve, which she has a Democratic primary in her congressional seat in South Florida, and a Sanders supporter is running against her, and it's a real race. And so that election is at the end of August, and, you know, she's in the fight of her life. So she's trying to both, I think, save some face and maintain relevance, but she has to remember this week's about Hillary Clinton and defeating Donald Trump, and nothing else matters.
Yeah, and she's a smart person. She can't be so ridiculous that she doesn't understand she's going to get just skewered if she goes on stage.
Well, she's just a great foil for all the frustrations of the Sanders folks, who I think, look, I was at the Illinois delegation breakfast this morning. Half of those elected delegates almost were Sanders folks. It was a great room. It was a lot of energy. People were united. So I think if she just maintains a low profile with Sanders speaking tonight, I think you will have a unified party. And I think, you know, look, the prospect of Donald Trump being president of the United States is unbelievably focusing for everyone, not just Democrats. But I think ultimately that's the tonic that you'll see a lot of this week, and that's why we got to go forward together.
Eric, that was my question to you as well. With this Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I said earlier, it's probably going to be the biggest brush under the rug right now, focusing on Hillary. You got big-time speakers, Michelle Obama, Bernie Sanders tonight, President Obama, Joe Biden on Wednesday. So I don't even think anyone's just going to allude to this.
No, I mean, you know how this works. When you have too many reporters in one place with not enough news to make, you know, the littlest thing becomes the biggest thing. And I'm not suggesting this isn't a story.
I know nothing about that, Eric.
Yeah, right. But once you have, as you say, Sanders speaking and the First Lady speaking and then, the president and the vice president, this thing is not going to be about her. But I do think the Russian piece, you know, is going to stay around as a story because people can't quite figure this out. I mean, just think about it. In the history since the Cold War, since the beginning of the Cold War, a major presidential candidate with a serious, legitimate suggestion that they might be allied with Russia?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I mean, come on.
I mean, if this were 1960, it'd be treason.
Exactly. It reminds me like Adams and Jefferson accusing each other of betraying the England and France. I mean, this is unbelievable. So we'll see where it goes.
I picture Putin like taking Trump's call at the Kremlin and then holding the phone a little bit away from his ear as he's motioning his buddies in to giggle. Donald. Yes, yes.
See, I see Putin like taking his shirt off and doing like a muscle and I'm like taking a selfie and showing it to Trump and seeing, look at my bicep and stuff. And I don't know what Trump's showing him back. I don't even want to know.
No. The whole thing is beyond bizarre. All right. So we'll continue to check with you until you stop taking our calls, but keep an eye on things in Philadelphia till Andrea gets there, please.
Sounds good. I will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Thank
Bye,
you, Eric Edelstein. He's great.
He's great. Yeah, we're gonna have a good time.
We got Pat Brady. We got Eric Edelstein.
Yep.
I mean, come on.
Good people to have on your side, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you look up and down television. You look at the newspapers. We got Brady, Edelstein. We got Pearson. Nobody's got the people we have.
No.
Politics insiders. You're there. Devlantis is there.
Yeah.
Rose there counting his money.
Got all the heavy hitters counting his money.
Yeah. I don't know.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
9:10 in the morning. Senator Durbin standing by in Philadelphia, where he will spend the week and be a part of the storyline leading up to Hillary Clinton's nomination and acceptance on Thursday night. Let's go to Senator Durbin now. It was 177 degrees here this weekend. Is the weather fine in Philly?
It's hot in Philadelphia.
Okay. All right. We sent it there. All the weather starts here, and then we send it there. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. How you doing?
We're doing fine. You know, not exactly the smooth start the Democrats had hoped. Is there any news in regards to the DNC chair not speaking this week, or is the plan that she'll still gavel in, speak, and gavel out?
I really don't know the role that she'll play, but it is clear that there were some differences between her and the Sanders campaign. Bernie said for a long time he didn't think the DNC was staying neutral. Well, the emails came out, wherever they came from, and suggested he was right. And so Hillary Clinton said, we're moving quickly. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, thank you for your service. We're going to have Donna Brazile take over the Democratic National Committee to the election. Donna, for most people who are political aficionados, is a pro. She's a great choice. She ran the Gore campaign. She is well-known, a good national spokesperson. I think it was a good choice.
Your name's come up a couple times. Would you take it after the election if offered?
Listen, I want to tell you that is one honor that I've not asked for. It is a big job, and I already have a big job as senator from the state and working on our own party operation here in this election for Hillary Clinton and Tammy Duckworth and Susana Mendoza. So, no, I'm not seeking that. My name's been mentioned a couple times. I guess that's flattering. That's as far as it's going.
I guess that's flattering. I know a good portion of your time has to be spent in and around making sure the candidates are properly funded. The DNC chair, am I wrong about this? And the RNC chair, the same thing. Don't they have to spend an inordinate amount of time on the phone looking for money?
If you only knew. You know, for the average member of Congress and senator, it is embarrassing. It borders on disgraceful, the amount of time that you have to spend to raise money. If you aren't individually, personally wealthy, like some people are in this business, you have to ask people to support you. And when you're head of a party, you know, it's a situation where you spend an inordinate amount of time raising money. The difference is, at this moment, we have the Koch brothers who have pledged up to $1 billion that they're going to personally put in the campaign on the Republican side. We have some friends on the Democratic side, but they aren't as loaded as the Koch brothers.
Where's Oprah? Write a check, right. Oprah.
Exactly. Hey, Senator, this week, I know big name speakers, of course, all week. Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama kicking everything off tonight. Do you think Bernie Sanders is going to allude to the Wasserman Schultz controversy or just move forward? It's going to brush under the rug and the focus is going to be on Hillary.
I don't know. You know, I think the key thing is that Bernie openly endorsed Hillary a few weeks ago. I knew that was coming. We didn't want to push him. He deserved the time to do it by his own schedule. He's going to support her. Now, will all of his supporters come around? Probably not all of them, but the overwhelming majority will. There'll be a few that will just say we're going to sit it out. Darn few who would vote for Donald Trump, I might add. But it's going to be good. And Bernie's going to be campaigning for her, and it'll help.
Now, President Clinton will speak later in the week. Vice President Biden, President Obama as well. And then Hillary Clinton will speak on Thursday night. Where's Tim Kaine fall in the schedule?
Usually it's, Wednesday night that the vice president's chosen, if I'm not mistaken. And the vote follows the actual vote for the presidential candidate. You contrast that with Cleveland. Now, I'll be honest with you. I didn't watch the Cleveland convention. I saw the news clips afterwards.
I taped it for you.
Well, thanks so much. I think the suspense was whether every member of the Trump family was going to endorse Donald Trump. And at the end of the week, I think they all did. You know, and that's good when all your kids are behind you in this effort. All kidding aside, he's got some impressive children, and I'm glad that he focused them, made them the kind of the highlight of his convention week.
In all fairness, Barron didn't speak.
Yeah, Barron did not speak. Barron chose actually to endorse one of the other 17 that stepped out of the race.
Is this a mystery child? I mean, I've seen some reference on the internet. I don't know this child.
He actually was dressed like his older half brothers.
Yes.
And he looked a little bit like a hostage blinking out, help me.
He did. He and Melania's son.
Yeah, a little bit.
In all fairness to the Trump family, there are some kids who just don't groove on this political scene.
Yeah, and he's a kid. He wants to play Pokemon Go, and, you know, hey, Dad, why don't you buy Pokemon for me?
Steve, are you playing that?
No. You know why? Because I still have a life.
Well, I run into these people who are wandering around. You know, they're filling up their Fitbit with all the exercise they're getting.
How about that?
Pokemon Go.
Well, I mentioned last week one of the saddest things I've seen in a long time. Two very healthy, I don't know, 10, 11, 12-year-old boys having fun, playing the Pokemon Go, thinking, great, they're getting exercise. They turn around, they get in a car with their grandmother to drive them around the neighborhood. Come on! Before we let you go, what do you hope to hear President Clinton say about Hillary Clinton?
Well, of course, he's going to play an important role in this administration, but the leadership is going to be Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. Former President Bill Clinton can really take an assignment and execute it well, particularly when it comes to the economy. Those 8 years of the Clinton presidency were the best in modern memory. Our president, Barack Obama, had to recover from the recession he inherited. But Bill Clinton took us into surplus in our federal budget. You know, most Republicans don't want to give us credit for that, but it was Bill Clinton who brought us several years of surplus and ended the deficits while the economy grew to record levels. If he can help with that sleight of hand, he'll be a trusted advisor to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and I do what I've seen so far of Tim Kaine. I like him. You know, maybe he's not going to be the most exciting guy in the room, but neither is Mike Pence.
Well, that's true. And you know, the interesting thing is when they questioned him on Meet the Press, Tim Kaine said, yeah, they say I'm boring, but it's the fastest growing demographic in America.
Right.
And I will tell you something. The word solid comes through over and over and over again. That's who he is. He is a person of value and principle. He's an intelligent, hardworking guy. I think Hillary made a great choice.
Well, I don't know if you can pull this off, but if any of your staff members faking playing Pokemon Go could lock Debbie Wasserman Schultz in her room until the convention's over, it might be a good move. My words, not yours.
I think she'll be low profile as she ends her term. I'm glad she served us and served us well, but this, whether it was a Russian hack or whatever it was, these emails were kind of the end of her reign.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We need to hear from President Obama, because that really, I mean, that's the biggest story, if the Russians are trying to involve themselves in an American presidential election.
Well, I can tell you, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we had a big debate over the cyber war that's going on, and the Chamber of Commerce was kind of resisting changes. And somebody said, did you know, incidentally, the Chinese have hacked into the U.S. Chamber of Commerce computer files for the last several years? The FBI discovered this. And the folks at the U.S. Chamber said, that's why our HVAC system wasn't working, and why these characters were coming out of the fax machine.
You know, this is, you know, Putin can't, can't be a delegate at either convention. So, you know, we, and I know you've been working on this for a long time, but we need to take cybersecurity much more seriously than we have on a national level, because all of the world's money and all of the world's security is tied up in data. So we better be able to protect it.
It absolutely is. It's a war that just keeps on going.
So thanks, all the best. Steve. Thanks for the time.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
There you go.
Bye-bye.
That's Senator Dick Durbin live from Philadelphia. This morning, where you will be when?
We'll be there Wednesday morning.
All right, good. Mm-hmm. And you're going to talk to Senator Durbin later in the week after
yes.
all of this S hits the fan.
Hoopla yeah. is what we're calling it. Yeah, Senator Durbin, hopefully on Thursday, as well as Congressman Gutierrez, too.
If last week's RNC was an S show, this week could be craptastic. Stand by for more. It's 9:19. We're back with more on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Later in the day, when he and I sat down and talked face to face, and he expressed to me the rationale behind his decisions, his actions, I should say, he understood at that time that because of his actions, there was going to be discipline.
In your opinion, does he need to apologize to either the fans or his teammates?
Again, from my opinion, this is an internal matter, and how he chooses to reintegrate himself into the clubhouse is Chris's choice.
What did he use to cut up the uniforms?
I'm not going to go down again through closed doors, things that happen behind closed doors.
Why would that be a secret? Is there some White Sox licensing agreement with a scissors company or something?
Part.
I can't refer to or speak of the instrument used in cutting up the jerseys. All right, do the
chainsaw. It was a chainsaw.
Do the backstory again for people that don't know.
Okay, so Chris Sale, who was supposed to start for the White Sox Saturday night, didn't like the 1976 throwback jerseys that the Sox were to wear, so he ripped up his and some others in the White Sox clubhouse. He was sent home. He was scratched from his start. And yesterday, the general manager, Rick Hahn, announced that Sale had been suspended 5 days. Pretty significant when you're talking about a guy who was starting the All-Star game 2 weeks ago and has been far and away your best player, not just your best pitcher all season, and the best pitcher in the American League to this point.
Now, the Sox gave out throwback jerseys to the first 20,000 fans. Did he cut all those up
he
as
did
well?
He didn't cut those, no.
He didn't go through the stands no. ripping them out of fans' no, hands?
Maybe they should have included scissors.
This is not the first time Chris Sale has clashed with management.
No.
There was the Adam LaRoche deal.
Right.
What was that like?
That was when he said that they were, I think the quote was, "We were bold-faced lied to by management." That was his quote. But he was not disciplined in any way at that time. That was in spring training.
And this is part of Jake's list. Let me go live to Mike Jacobson, sports guru and producer extraordinaire and part-time criminal. All right, Jake, so you have a list of other great sports moments in Chicago, which may or may not rival this. To me, Sale cutting up the jerseys is top five all time.
I think it's up there, but that Adam LaRoche story was that was pretty big.
It was pretty yeah. big because Adam LaRoche took his kid out of school, and you showed me this quote back in the day, Jake, that just this past spring, where he said something about, yeah, we're not that big on school, and he's learning more hanging around the baseball team than he would in school anyway.
Well, you don't learn how to, you know, chew and spit and I'll leave it at that at school.
The best part of that was the quote, I think it was Adam Eaton, who said that we've lost a team leader, and he was talking about the kid, Drake.
Wow. Yeah. I wow. What are you going to say other than wow?
Right.
What else made your list, Jake?
Well, I just went back to the Trestman era, the Mark Trestman era, for those who don't remember the old head coach of the Chicago Bears. There were so many things that happened during that time. It was a producer's dream, a sports producer's dream, which I was at that time. But the Aaron Cromer situation, where his offensive coordinator basically was a rat to the NFL Network, saying that Jay Cutler is a poor game manager and he's screwing us all up.
Didn't he cry in a press conference?
Yeah,
or something
that, like that? No. Then he had a lock. Then he went into the locker room. Aaron Cromer, the offensive coordinator, gave a tearful apology to Jay Cutler in front of everybody. And there was many sources saying that Cutler just sat there and shook his head the whole time.
And then Cromer. Am I remembering this right? Didn't he punch out somebody at a kid's baseball game? Or
that was after he had left here. Yeah,
that's when he went to Buffalo.
Okay, yeah. All right. So obviously a well-balanced guy.
And Mark Trestman didn't fire him or demote him after this whole thing happened.
No, of course not.
Mark
no.
Trestman also let Lance Briggs open up his restaurant and miss practice.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The barbecue restaurant in California, the Double Nickelbacks, whatever it was called.
The football season isn't that long. Can you imagine going in and going, hey, coach, I'm going to need 2 days off. When does camp start? Thursday? I can't come in till Monday. I'm going to go open my restaurant. Sure, Briggsy. Whatever you need.
Didn't he have people doing that for him?
You would think. And the worst part is that the Nickelback Steakhouse or whatever it was called, the barbecue, bad reviews.
Oh.
Did not get good reviews.
Is it still open?
I don't know. I think it's out in like the Sacramento area, so I haven't been out there lately.
All right, number three. And by the way, these are no specific order.
Oh, just the last one of the Trestman era was when Brandon Marshall held his own press conference. He called for a press conference and then held it. And that was fine. He talked for like 45 minutes.
Oh.
Right. And it was without Bears approval. He just threw his own press conference.
Yeah.
All right. Who else is on your list, though?
I think, there's many things to choose from Derrick Rose. But when he came up with that comment, sitting out so he won't be sore during future meetings and so he can be at his son's graduation.
Do
you remember that?
Yeah.
I can't risk being able to be at my son's at weddings and at my son's graduation. I can't be out there running like a crazy nut on an NBA basketball court. I've got to sit here and just collect the money.
Right. Yeah, have fun. I'm sure they'll have a lot of fun with him in New York because the media's not big out there or anything. They're not going to ask him tough questions.
I don't know how he's going to do that.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. Going to the baseball realm, Sammy Sosa, when he sneezed and then injured his back, ended up getting back spasm from a bad sneeze.
That's not as crazy as it sounds. I know people who have.
Was that when you were on steroids as well?
No, but I'm just saying, anyone who's ever had a bad back will tell you that you can do things
sure.
very, very gently and all of a sudden.
Totally true. I remember when I was completely juiced up and I blinked and I wrenched my neck. I mean, that's what happens. It happens, Dave.
Why do I even try? Go ahead, Mike.
I was remembering another one. I don't remember if we talked about this. Didn't Glenn Allen Hill break his ribs sneezing or something?
Well, Glenn Allen Hill, this was before he came to the Cubs, I think. And he injured himself he had a nightmare about a spider.
Which I have had, and they are scary.
See? I think he fell out of bed.
Jake, what was the Woody moment?
That's when he fell in the hot tub. Kerry Wood fell in the hot tub.
He fell getting in or getting out?
I think it was getting in. We can confirm since he's on with us once a week, or not us, but the station on Row Show. So, yeah, he slipped, and he was out for 4 to 6 days.
And that wasn't just an excuse to try to not do Row Show?
No.
Okay, that actually happened.
No, he uses other excuses for that one.
And again, these are just the top of mind stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is just we're just scratching the surface. Give me one more.
And then the one that you told me, or actually Chris Sale, going back to him, he broke his foot while unloading something from his truck. That was last season.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. He jumped off
his
pickup
the bed.
Truck.
Yeah.
It was late starting the season.
And then you mentioned, too, this is a little before my time, and I vaguely remember the Scottie Pippen gun thing.
Yeah, Dave, what was that? Scottie Pippen had a gun in the truck, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
You really don't need anything more than that. That's the entire story.
Was there circumstances behind why he had it? Or
a lot of guys didn't like Krause. Right. What do you want me to tell you?
What about who flipped off the fans? Was it Todd Hundley and LaTroy Hawkins flipped off the fans?
There was
Wrigley?
A period of time with the Cubs where that was a regular post-game ceremony as they were walking off the field. And before we come back to wrap this up, the Cub chosen to flip off the fans today is...
LaTroy Hawkins did not endear himself to Cubs fans, even though he's from here.
And he's still playing, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's played on every team in the MLB.
Twice!
I'm almost positive.
And he's
49 years old.
And he's not had problems with fans, to my knowledge, other places like he did here.
He didn't suck there.
To bring it all full circle, one of my favorite moments, and this is something you can't make up, 1994, I'm at Wrigley. If it's not opening day, it may have been the second day. Hillary Clinton's back in town as the first lady to throw out the first pitch. And there's two very attractive women sitting a couple of rows behind me, suburban young mom types. And I turn around just as they hold up a sign that says, "We slept with your husband, too."
Oh,
welcome home, Hillary. 9:31. We're back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hillary and I have become friends, but we're not bosom buddies. You know, we don't go vacationing together. I think that I've got a pretty clear-eyed sense of both her strengths and her weaknesses. And what I would say would be that this is somebody who knows as much about domestic and foreign policy as anybody, is tough as nails, understands that in this democracy that we have, things don't always happen as fast as we'd like, and it requires compromise and grinding it out. She's not always flashy, and there are better speech makers, but she knows her stuff.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove it,
wow, what a compliment. Rokan joins us from Philly.
Oh, man.
I don't know that I'm
really.
If that's the speech he's given this week, maybe stay home.
Well, this is a mess here in Philadelphia. First of all, I do like that. It's sort of like, how do I look in this? You look fine. I mean, that's basically what he said. You know, it's the other F word. No, she's fine. She'll be fine.
Do I look fat in this? That's, I'm on the phone.
Yes. Exactly.
No, it's like
saying,
my
God.
Not really. Do I look fat in this? Not really.
Well, it's sort of a well. I don't, you know. I
hey, listen.
You know, when he said, just 1 second, Steve, when she said, when he goes, she's not the best speech maker, I'm like, what? Yeah. What?
Well,
we know it, but please.
Threw in she's not flashy.
Well, her pantsuits are. So.
What woman doesn't want to hear you're not flashy?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, my. Uh-oh. Mm-mm. This is trouble.
Listen, we have a little news here as well, and I don't know if you're aware of it because you were traveling to Philly. And inexplicably, suddenly, Downers Grove, Republican House Rep Ron Sandak resigned this weekend. He's one of Rauner's lead guys. And he resigned, Ro. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
He resigned, Ro, because his social media accounts were hacked.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Were there pictures of private parts on there?
That's what you're wondering, right? I mean, what could... Okay, your social media accounts were hacked, so you quit? I don't understand the connection.
But then after that, he followed it up with, well, I miss my kids, too.
Was that in one of his social media accounts?
I don't know. He says, my duties in Springfield have meant missing a lot of events in the lives of my children.
So this is why I'm advocating you never put anything in writing. Not in your social media, not in your emails. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, those names should never be mentioned in any writing whatsoever. In that hot mess, Andrea just played the reception she got at the Florida delegation this morning. How could she show up on stage?
She can't because she's going to get booed.
Yeah, I mean, play the booing. Do you have the booing?
I do. You ready?
Play this for Ro. This was, I don't think Ro heard
here,
this.
Ro.
Yeah, no, I watched this live this morning, too.
That's and it was, breakfast.
Right. I don't. Where are my eggs? I wanted scrambled eggs.
It's, what goes on for?
It sounds like a scene from Blazing Saddles.
I wanted wheat toast.
It's unbelievable.
It's the whole thing, Steve, Andrea, the whole thing is bad.
I know.
I mean, if for Democrats, this could not, as bad as it was, as the Trump thing was in the first couple days of the RNC, and you know how the sort of sideways everything was starting there, I think this is starting even worse.
So
right? Because you're coming off of the emails, you're coming off of now the Bernie Sanders people, and I mentioned this last night when I was on with Brian Noonan. We were on the flight with Mike Madigan, and I just kept thinking, well, there's no way that this plane's going to crash because the forces of darkness are upon us.
Right.
He needs to render himself to Philadelphia.
I wouldn't have let him off the plane until he agreed to an interview.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, it's so funny. So Mike Flannery was on the flight from Fox 32, was on the flight with us, too. And he made sure that his camera met him at the baggage claim as we were coming down the escalator. And he manhandled Madigan into doing the interview. It was unbelievable.
Did you get anything out of him other than the fact that Rauner sucks and it's all Rauner's fault?
Yeah, no, he didn't. But the point is that at least it was done. So there's good hijinks happening here with the Illinois delegation as well.
If you're the Florida delegation and the most prominent woman in your delegation comes forward to speak and she's had a rough weekend and you boo her like that. I'm telling you, she shouldn't even be able to be in the state of Pennsylvania.
No.
Well, okay, so this is interesting, though. Who were those people? That was obviously organized. They were all holding up the same signs that were printed off of a computer printer.
Hair straightener. Hair straightener.
I think it's cute. Anyway, the point is that they were all standing there. Who are they? Are they Bernie Sanders people? Trump people? Are they Vladimir Putin people?
Yeah,
Not necessarily.
Well, who goes to these breakfasts then?
Anybody can get into any of these things. So
they could have been just people from the Poconos that were hungry?
People at the hotel.
I said wheat toast. I have gluten.
And that's just the beginning. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, you're old enough, Ro, as I am, to remember Get Smart. So yes. Apparently they're doing a reboot of this because I heard the craziest thing. I heard the Russians are trying to affect the presidential election, and they're using this crazy Debbie Wasserman Schultz woman with the curly hair. That's got to be a chaos plot. That can't actually be happening.
That's right, Siegfried. This is definitely weird. It's definitely weird. Now the thing is that they claim that they can trace it to the same deal. Right, they can trace it to the same IP addresses as other what they call government actors in Russia. The other story that's emerging today too is that Paul Manafort has a relationship with the pro-Putin Ukrainian president. Now, what goes on there?
Exactly. Well, the thing that we heard all weekend long is. The reason Trump doesn't release his taxes is he's not worth the amount of money he says he is. He's given almost nothing to charity, and he's made a bunch of money off of Russia. So is there – I'd be very disappointed if I found out Trump did actually have a plan. And remember when Phil Hartman played Reagan as the blundering fool?
Yeah.
And then when the Boy Scout tour left the Oval Office, he turned into this genius who was running everything and really running the world. Maybe Trump's not an idiot. Maybe he's Dr. Evil.
Oh, he's not an idiot. I mean, that's the thing. He's a blowhard, but that doesn't mean he's stupid. He is very smart, and I think that's the really scary part of this.
I refuse to go there. See, I've lived in the world that stupid and power are two really dangerous combinations, and I still think he's stupid. But there's something to this Russian story.
If you read the New Yorker piece, this is fascinating. The New Yorker did an interview with the guy who co-wrote his best-selling book, the greatest book since the Bible, right? Art of the Deal. So the co-writer, ghostwriter,
he's gone bad on him,
Yeah, it's broken bad on him, but in a really interesting way. He says that he's it's not that he's stupid. He's just got serious ADD, and he is not interested in new thoughts. He's just not interested. He's not curious. Believes whatever he thinks he believes.
Oh, my God. Listen, Philadelphia turns out to be more fun than we thought it would be.
Oh, and, for sure.
You're on at 3. Anna will join you later this week. Andre will join you later this week. And have fun in Philly.
Oh, thank you.
All right, talk to you later.
I'll do my best.
Hold the fort down.
That's real come.
Where's my grapefruit?
There he is.
I was talking about John Oliver last week tonight. Taking apart Trump one more time. Give me one more clip of that. Bill and Wendy coming up here in a couple of minutes. The band has to wind down before we can actually bring in the John Oliver. And in 3, 2, 1.
Remember, this is the man who has retaliated against journalists and at various points has advocated killing terrorist families, endorsed torture, and expressed admiration for leaders like Kim Jong-un, Saddam Hussein, and Vladimir Putin. His message this week was the message of every strong man ever. The world is dangerous and only I can make you safe. And if that sounds scary, there have been warning signs. Just watch this DVD extra from the first season of The Apprentice. It's a music video they made, and it gives you a sense of how Donald Trump envisions himself.
This is a dictatorship, and I'm the dictator. There's no voting, there's no jury. Dictator.
Oh, sure. It's funny now to hear him say he's a dictator as a voice in the background says slave to the master over and over again. But unless we're careful, by this time next year, that could be America's new national anthem.
It's the Trumpster. It's the Trumpster as only the Trumpster can be. And get HBO just for the John Oliver thing.
Very funny last night.
It was great. It's great.
The whole bit about what's the English politician, Boris Johnson? Uh-huh. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Showing him and all the success he's had. Very
well, how
funny.
About Natasha?
I know.
back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.